honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and today's visit with 96-year-old Gabe Gablehouse of Modesto, California, originally from Lincoln, Nebraska, where he fudged his birth year from 1925 to 24 so he could join the Navy at age 16. His first ship was sunk from underneath him by a German torpedo in the Atlantic, but he'd spend most of World War II in the South Pacific with Acorn 28 in the Admiralty Islands. That's where he witnessed the tragic explosion of the ammunition ship USS Mount Hood. Let's pick up Gabe's story after VJ Day, when he returned to the States, ending up at Camp Shoemaker in California's Bay Area.
I went from there to Virginia. I went aboard the USS Mississippi. It was a battleship, but it was a converted to a gunnery ship. And we'd go out every day and practice gunnery. And I went from the Mississippi to the USS Ranger, the old Ranger, which is CV-4, and it did the same thing.
This must have been the time period when you met your wife.
Right, what?
And it sounds like if it weren't for the Navy, you wouldn't have met your wife.
No, probably not. No, that's true.
So what happened? How'd you guys meet?
I seen her go into a department store. She went into that store, and I seen her go in there. I was with my friend. She went up in the elevator, and I finally went up starting to looking, and I found she worked there. She worked in the photo department. She said, tinning a photo. That's where I met her right there.
What was her name?
Her name was Mary O'Dell.
What was it about her that made an impression on you?
Just a good-looking gal, nice lady.
How did she feel about sailors?
Ain't none of them felt too good about sailors, I don't think. Not at first, anyhow, yeah.
You had to win her over?
I won her over, yeah. Yeah, we married January 28th, 1949, and she died January 28th, 2003.
So exactly 54 years of marriage.
Yeah, wow. Yeah.
Well, and that also means that she put in a dozen years as a Navy wife.
12 years, yeah. Then we moved to California. And that's when I ended up on the destroyer escort, Gilligan. I was on there for about 2 years, I guess.
Yeah.
And then I went from there to Treasure Island for 2 years. And I went from Treasure Island to the USS General A.E. Anderson with a troop transport. And we carried troops to, well, all over the world, mostly to South Korea. We carried pilots. Whatever we took in, we had to bring that many back out.
I want to ask you about something that happened during the Korean War, because I was able to find a little write-up about you from 1951. We think about the Navy or the Army, and we think about combat, but there are a lot of other things that are happening. So this is what this says about you. Under the headline, honored for rescuing two injured shipmates. It says, for rescuing two shipmates who had been injured by huge waves which were about to sweep them overboard from their ship, Melvin M. Gablehouse, BM-1, USN, has been awarded a Secretary of the Navy Letter of Commendation. When USS Gilligan, DE-508, was entering the channel leading into Coos Bay Harbor, Oregon, its stern was engulfed by a huge wave. Two men were knocked down and injured and were about to be swept overboard by a second giant wave when Gablehouse went to their rescue. He assisted them to a place of safety just before the second wave engulfed the stern of the ship, thus saving the men from probable death.
Yeah.
All right, so I got to hear this story. So I'm assuming your wife's probably back home in California, right?
No, she's in Portland.
She's in Portland, and you guys are up the coast at Coos Bay.
Yeah.
And what were you guys doing up there?
That's a training ship, training reserve sailors.
So this sounds pretty routine, right? You're just going up to Coos Bay, training guys how to fire the guns.
Yeah, right. Well, we went into Coos Bay.
Yeah.
Everything was fine. We was coming into Coos Bay, a wave give out. And we dropped, I think, about 33 feet or something. Then the wave came over the top of the ship. And it, the gun turrets, they're built up like that. They just flattened them.
Wow.
Took water down the stack. Just a freak accident.
And where were you at the time?
I was out on the stern of the deck on the back.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And
holding on.
I was going to say, I mean, it's not like you're standing on level ground. It's, you're getting jolted.
Yeah, yeah. I had my hands through a bar and locked, trying to hold on.
Well, and that's what strikes me about that story when I read it. I'm thinking, what would I do? And if there's a wave that big that could maybe even, you know, take the ship down,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
That I would be holding on for dear life.
If you see it coming, I see it coming. Yeah, if anybody didn't see it coming, well, they're gone.
So you're holding on for dear life, and while you're doing that, you notice these two other guys?
They got washed into the hand lines, you call them.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we got them back. And then I picked up it was a great big old piece of a gangplank, more or less, and I threw it over the side because I could see sailors out there in the water.
Well, and how far were you from these guys you saved?
Oh, probably 15, 20 feet, maybe a little closer.
And so it says, two men were knocked down and injured and were about to be swept overboard by a second wave when you came to the... So you didn't have a lot of time here.
No.
And weren't you risking your own life by letting go and going to them?
Probably. Yeah, probably.
So what makes somebody do that?
Instinct, I guess. I don't know.
And so you threw something to them, or you had to go get to where they were?
I went to where they were, but the other guys was already in the water when I threw this out, so they could float on it if they could get to it. I don't think some of them made it.
So this is before you got to those guys. You're throwing the gangplank in the water. Okay. All right. All right, so we'll get to that in a sec. So let's talk about these two guys. They're 15 to 20 feet away from you?
I was maybe closer. Okay. Maybe closer, yeah. The gun tub was here, and then the side of the ship. Yeah, maybe a little closer, probably maybe 10, 12 feet, probably.
But you can tell they didn't see this coming. They get knocked down, and they're hurt?
Yeah, they got washed into the lines from somewhere. I don't remember where they were.
So what would have happened to them if you didn't act?
On that next wave, we'll just push them through the lines. They would have been out in the water, in the river.
So you run to them, and you help them both. Where'd you pull them to?
Where I was at, on the line, on the gun tub.
And I'm just trying to imagine this scene in my head, and it kind of feels like it's one of those movies where as you're watching, it goes in slow motion, and you don't know if you're going to get them back there in time.
You don't know.
Because if you've let go and you're with them and you're trying to get back in time and that wave hits too soon, you're going to get washed away with them.
Yeah, all of it. Yeah.
How close do you think it was?
I have no idea.
You think like a second or two?
Probably. It was quick, yeah. But probably within a couple of seconds.
And so when that wave did hit, what was that like?
That's when it did all the damage. As much damage. More so than the first one, I think.
And you're feeling that wave, I'm sure.
Well, where I was and where we were at that time, not so much because it broke up from the gun tub, where we were at.
So you had some shelter.
Hanging on.
I imagine they were appreciative of your efforts.
I don't even know who they were.
You think they knew who you were?
Probably not. Like I said, it was... A lot of reservists on there, and you don't know who they are. Mm-hmm. They come from all over.
It's not impossible that one of them could be listening right now.
Never know.
But it wasn't over yet, so you get them to safety, and that commendation says you saved their lives, but then you notice there's people that are in the river?
Yeah, you can see heads bobbing. Yeah. I don't remember if they lowered... Lowered boats to go get those people. I don't even remember.
You ripped up a piece of the gangplank, or you saw it lying on the side?
No, it was just laying there. Uh-huh. It was, I forget what it was, Why? I don't remember why it was there.
I wonder if the wave knocked it loose or something.
I don't know. I didn't know it was there.
So you picked that up and threw it in the water.
I do.
Here's another. I know these are a lot of questions about one particular thing, but I'm just fascinated because I wonder how many people listening would have done what you did. And I'm wondering, were there other people nearby who, you were the only one?
Only one that I know was out there at that time. Yeah. So, in that particular spot.
So if you didn't help them, nobody would?
There was nobody there to do it, no. We was all in stations, regular stations for entering port.
Is that something that when you see your wife again back in Portland, you tell her about, or you say, yeah, maybe I shouldn't tell her?
No, they all knew about it. It was all in the paper. Yeah. Some of the families drove up to Coos Bay from Portland. And that's a hell of a drive.
You mean the families of the guys you saved?
Yeah. No, all of the shipboard people.
All right. So this is during the Korean War, and you're doing that there. And then you said you got on a troop ship and took pilots to Korea, right?
Troops and pilots, yeah. Carried a lot of troops. We would load up in San Francisco, Fort Mason, go to Oakland, fill up with stores, and then head out to, first stop was usually Hawaii, and then Japan, and then one cruise would be same thing, except not Japan, we go to Korea, all over, dropping troops off.
Do you ever spend time thinking about what those troops you're carrying would be experiencing over there?
No, you do. You just about knew what was going on.
And you still weren't done because you told us you stayed in until 1961. So what were you doing those last several years in the Navy?
Well, let's see. I was stationed once in Atsugi Bay, Atsugi, Japan. I was in there when the pilot flew a U-2 plane, Powers. When he was flying that, he landed every night, well, almost every night, at Atsugi. The Marines would go out and hold the wings up on the plane because they only had two wheels.
So, and just to put this in context, and people, if they're not familiar with the story, I'm sure they can Google Francis Gary Powers and they'll get the whole story about the U-2 spy plane.
Yeah.
But at the time, this isn't supposed to be known. This is top secret, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But you knew about it.
I could go out on the field where he was landing, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And you knew what the purpose was?
Oh, yeah, spy plane. Yeah, oh, we all knew.
So you had a secret that you had to keep.
Well, who was he going to tell? You know, you can't tell nobody, yeah. Yeah, well, he would come in there almost every night making those flights. He'd go out and watch Gary come in.
Yeah, did you ever talk to him or anything?
No, he was surrounded by Marines and everything else. They get him out and take him somewhere.
Well, I imagine then that when what happened to him happened, when he disappeared, that's probably something that got your attention.
Not really.
No.
You know, you just figure those kind of things happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you joined in 41. You got out in 61. Was there any part of you that was hoping you could stay in the Navy longer?
No. I was married and had three kids.
Yeah.
And I figured it was time.
What was your favorite thing about 20 years in the Navy?
I loved it all. I had a good time. I enjoyed it.
And I don't know if I asked you before when we were talking about World War II or any of these other times. Was there something that when you look back, you say, hey, that was the most challenging thing I had to go through?
No, not really. It's all a challenge. All, every day is a challenge of the service.
Well, what do you think enabled you to meet that challenge? Was there something from a mental or psychological standpoint or just the way you were raised that you think helped you?
Yeah, probably the way I was raised. It was just something that I wanted. Just something I wanted to do.
Well, one thing I don't want to forget to say is thank you. Thank you for serving our country and thank you for telling us a little bit about it. When you look back on that, 20 years serving in the Navy, is there something that you'd say you're most proud of?
Yeah, just serving. Yeah, enjoyed it.
Are there some moments that you lived through during your time in the Navy that sometimes still pop back in your mind? You can see them visually?
Yeah. Yeah. It's torpedoing, I see that once in a while. Out in the Admiralty Islands, I see that once in a while. But nothing real bad.
And you're 96 now.
Mm-hmm. It's 96, July 24th.
So what keeps you going?
You got me. The good man up there, I guess.
I think when I walked in the door, I felt a little ashamed because you were standing straighter than I was. What's your secret to staying in such good shape?
I used to walk and work out a little bit, but I don't do that no more. Other than that, I do a lot of baking.
What do you bake?
Everything. Bread, cookies, cakes, anything you need. Give it all away.
How long you been doing that?
Oh, years. Yeah, a long time.
So you're 96 years old and you're still baking to give it away to your neighbors.
Yeah. I took, I guess, about 3 or 4 dozen cookies yesterday to the doctor's office. Turned the ladies loose on the cookies. They enjoyed it.
I have to imagine they would. And I guess I have to ask the obvious question. Why? Why do you do that?
I like to do it. It keeps me going. No aches or pains when you're doing it.
I guess I also have to ask, what's the tastiest thing you've ever baked?
Well, the thing that I enjoy is an old, you wouldn't know what it is, it's an old German, they used to call them Grauhoge, or Grauhoge from the Lake of Nebraska, the old German people used to make it. It's cabbage and hamburger and onions, filling, and you put it in a piece of dough and you bake it. It's a hell of a meal.
It almost sounds like a bigger version of a beer rock.
Well, it is, yeah, beer rock. Beer rock, I think, is made with sausage, and like it's made with hamburger.
And is there anything that you haven't done yet in 96 years that you're still hoping to do sometime?
I don't know. Maybe I'll parachute out of a plane one of these days.
Have you ever done that?
No.
But you want to.
Looks like it might be a challenge.
Well, maybe that'll be the next chapter in a pretty fascinating life story. That is Gabe Gablehaus, 96 years old. Check out the photos and that short video at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. Thanks so much for listening today. I'm Paul Leffler, hoping you'll join us again next time when we're reminded again through the stories of our veterans that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.